Recording now, folks. Welcome to episode 9 of Pod Rock. I'm your host, Justin Case, and with me I got my trusty co-host,
Ben State.
And today we're going to be all about talking about Dio's guitarists. Ronnie James Dio, that is. You know, Rainbow in the Dark, Last in Line, at one point singer for Black Sabbath, Ozzy replacement. We're going to be talking about him today and his preferred guitarists, particularly. So, yeah. And I'm excited to do this. It's one of those veins that hasn't really been tapped as far as anything we've talked about yet on this show. And I'm going to really get cut to the chase, and I want to get to some music fans out there, especially if you're a Def Leppard fan. Vivian Campbell is one of those people, and he, when I first heard him play, I had this Metal It's Alive compilation cassette tape. Yes, I said cassette tape. I found it at a Big Lots bargain bin in New York, and it had the little notch cut out of it. You know, that's what they use for, so they don't, they let you know that it's a discount. That, I believe that's what that little notch is for. And I don't remember, Ben, if we've ever talked about that, but a lot of the stuff I would find, you know, by the time the late 90s, early 2000s rolled around, a lot of that, well, at least late 90s, people weren't listening to that kind of, like, some of the older acts at that point. But for me, I was just discovering them. And when I got this compilation tape, not only did it have Alcatraz with Yngwie Malmsteen, they played Hiroshima Mon Amour on there as a live version. All the songs were live. There was actually a Rainbow song on there. It's I Surrender. That was on there with Ritchie Blackmore. And it just had this killer lineup. That is how I got my variety pack of guitarists, especially for some of the 70s acts and 80s acts. I started getting, like, for up till then, my palette consisted of like Van Halen, ZZ Top, some of the really mainstream acts that were still carrying over and doing very well as far as mainstream rock radio is concerned, or at least in the, if you want to call it classic rock at that time. But I guess what I'm getting at is that when I heard this tape, Vivian Campbell's on there and they were doing a live version of Rainbow in the Dark. And I thought it was fantastic. The guitar tone, it's just like, you could really feel him chewing into the strings, and his amp was just like ready to explode. It was just, he had this crang, you know, it's just like when he hit that first opening chord, it was just, it had a nice crang to it. And I'm not alluding to Crang magazine, but some of you over in Japan might know about that. But anyway, it had that really nice sustain. And I think he was using the Les Paul at that point. Cause I know that if you've got a stop tail piece, you know, really like a hard tail, like a Les Paul would have, that sustain is there. And I know Vivian Campbell had a black Les Paul. I think it was a Les Paul custom, and it was just like, oh my gosh. And I got to tell you something too. I'm going to pick one of those up. I'm going to get one of those Slash Tobacco Burst Les Paul. I don't know where that came from.
Cracking me up today.
Yeah,
it's, I think it's, he still I've uses. I know that I've seen live Def Leppard. You know, obviously there's videos and YouTube and stuff out there, but I think they're still doing tours. And I think Vivian Campbell's still using that that Les Paul with the tailstop on at least, you know, majority of the songs that I've seen in some of those videos. Yeah. And yeah, I agree with you. I think that his tone and his sound is really cool. And, you know, you're, at least for me, in my opinion, as far as Gibson Les Pauls go, you're going to get some more of that bassier tone out of that, you know, the thicker neck. And yeah, the body. And of course, you know, most of them come with the two volume knobs, the tone knobs, and you can kind of tweak it. If you pull back on that volume knob a little bit, you get a little bit more sound instead of just zeros, right? So much you can go into negative and you can get a little bit of crazy tone with it. But yeah, I agree with you on that, that sound that he can produce and that he gets out of his style and his music.
Yeah, because as a matter of fact, it's funny you mention it, some of the stuff they've been doing lately, at least in the last few years, they've got that band Last in Line where they're doing all the Dio songs. I caught some of their live gigs like circa 2019 on YouTube, and they were just amazing. And you can tell Vivian Campbell's just loving it, man. He's got a big smile on his face. He's nailing all the solos. And I mean, you know, those songs like a bag of his hand. You can just tell that he just really feels good playing those again. And, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, there were differences between him and Ronnie James Dio. It got pretty nasty, but I think they ended up patching things up. You know, well, I don't know that they did. I can't really say that, but I hope they did. But anyway, So that it was great because Epiphone has a Vivian Campbell guitar signature axe out there, if I'm not misunderstanding it. Because right now I know Epiphone has expanded their selection. They've been purportedly getting better customer feedback on their guitars than even Gibson. Some have even gone to say that they're even better than the Gibson guitars that are being put out right now. I guess shocking in a way, but I think it's for product consistency. They're probably actually ahead of the pack. So I can't say that for myself because I had an Epiphone SG and I took it apart and it was dismal. But that was a different time. That was like 18 years ago.
So, is that a statement about Gibson or Epiphone guitars? You're like, yeah, let's just take this one apart. Let's save the pieces for something else.
Yeah, well, I did take it apart, and I wanted to reconfigure it so that the, you know how it is on an SG. Folks that are, you know, familiar with an SG would be like the instrument jack goes in the side of the guitar instead of in the back. It's just kind of cheesy looking. So I was drilling a hole in the bottom of it, you know, and everything, making it a custom for my needs. And I tell you, the guitar sounds great. One of the neck pickups crapped out about a week after I had it, and the switch died. So I had you guys at the then local guitar shop. Shout out to Music Machine, no longer around, but it was a great shop. They put in Gibson 57 Classics for free. They didn't
really.
They're like, well, because it was the warranty, right? And they at that time they were full Epiphone and full Gibson authorized dealer. They had full power of a warranty. So like, yeah, we'll put in new pickups for you. So that's the bridge cool. Pickups are refrigerator magnet right now. And the neck pickup is, I don't know, somewhere in my garage, but it just quit working. And it actually sounded pretty good. It had a nice kind of a tubular sound to it, but maybe that's because it was failing. I'm not sure. But anyway, I still like the guitar. It's got kind of, I've played a lot of gigs with it. The fretboard, actually, they used to put a die on the fretboard. So if it was a rosewood, they put a black die on her to make it look like an ebony, which is really funny. So over time, that has worn off because I played it so much, and now you can see the rosewood underneath, right?
That fade, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a cheap guitar, but it's actually served me very well, and it's great. So I'm going to put a fourth bolt in it so that because any SG you play is going to have a weak neck joint. They just always have because of the way that it's built. And so it's not uncommon for guys that have broken those necks, especially in the 70s. It probably was terrible. I know Tony Iommi, I read an article a long time ago where he's saying that it was hard. You couldn't get spare parts for anything. You had to go get another guitar. And he was a lefty, like me, you know. So I sympathize to a point, but I can't imagine what he went through. So he said he threw a whole guitar out because it didn't have replacement parts. So
yeah, I don't doubt it. I seen Peter Klett from Candlebox. And
yeah, awesome.
He was in the middle of – he plays Les Pauls, as you know. And he was in the middle of doing Far Behind, and his guitar was just – he was hating it, you can tell, because he was transposing the song itself and playing it all over the neck, trying to keep it, you know, in tune and trying to play boy. It correctly. And, it, mm-hmm. you know, kudos to him because, I mean, if you haven't seen them, definitely see them because they are a class act. He was struggling with it, and then by the end of the song, he literally took it from the headstock grabbing on the neck. And he just slammed it right down, like butt first onto the stage, right? And then he literally threw it off the stage. I mean, he was, you know, visually frustrated. But I've seen people have struggles, like you're saying, with some of the equipment that Gibson has put out. I mean, not necessarily the neck. I haven't seen that problem. But I can imagine, you know, if he's having struggles even playing it live. You know, other people, it's almost like any kind of guitar. I mean, I've seen people, and I was going to talk about this in the news. We can get the news later after we talk about the Dio stuff.
Oh, yes.
That Mike Stone, who is now filling in for Parker Lundgren, who quit Queensryche, he didn't like the pickups on ESP guitars. As soon as he got it, he just cut those pickups out and put his own custom brand of pickups in it. So, you know, it goes to show you that you can even take some guitars that are, you know, even what you would think be top of the notch or even mid of the way, you know, customize it the way that you like it and put the stuff in that you deem that you can get out of it, right? And try to improve on what they would sell you. I mean, mm-hmm. when you're spending $2,000, the first thing in my mind is like, yeah, I don't want to play with this thing and rip it apart, right? I paid top dollar for something that I want to use and I want to play. But, you know, also at the same time, if you're in a spot where you know what sounds you like, what kind of tones you want to get. Some of our past podcasts have talked about different pickups and strings and all that kind of stuff. So go back and listen to some of that if you're interested. But you can definitely get some different tones and some different crunch out of what you're wanting, just because the manufacturer is sending you pickups, you know, from a Gibson or ESP or Jackson or, you know, Charvel, Washburn, anything that you're buying, you know, check out and see what you might want to put in it to kind of make it your own in essence.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say that even some of the more affordable guitars these days are, the quality is, it's miles beyond what it used to be. You know, it, like I was just saying earlier about the SG, that thing was a nightmare. It was a lemon. I still have it, but it didn't cost me a lot of money though either. There was a sale going on. I think it paid something cheap, like $130, and it's like a $250 guitar. And you know, I was a lot younger then, so you know, I wasn't going to be going out and getting a Les Paul custom from the custom shop or anything. But I think that, you know, before I'm going to get back to the deal thing, but just real quick before we leave this topic, is if you're going to get something like a Les Paul or an SG, I would encourage some of the younger players out there, find a way to make some money and save up for something good. And you don't necessarily have to go and get something new. Having said that, I think that you really don't be impatient. Don't say, I got to have it now. Don't do that, because if you look around between, there's classified ads, are those still a thing? I believe they are. I guess the maybe not like Facebook Marketplace or any of that stuff. I won't mention the yellow pages. Oh, I guess I just did.
Anyway. Nice.
Yeah.
So anyway, the walking.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, geez. So go online and really take your time to find something that you would be happy with. And because right now, like, guitar centers are totally like they're picked over, and the supply problems for everything right now, it's just so hard to try and get something new. You're going to be waiting anyway. So I would suggest that what you do is you go find some used, go on, I guess if you find a good seller, do your research. eBay might work. Reverb, everything's inflated because people are being a bunch of price gouging scalpers right now for used gear. But what I would tell you is all these things in mind, take your time to find a better guitar than what you have, if something you're going to be happy with. And you'll find some good stuff out there. And that way, you know, you might be able to talk to the person. They'll say, hey, this served me very well. I just don't need it. Or I upgraded, or I'm getting rid of my stuff because I don't want to play anymore, or my kid or something. You get a backstory on the guitar, and that way you know what you're getting. So that's kind of my Jerry Springer word of advice, final thought on this segment. But I'm going to jump back to the DL guitarist. And one of the – Vivian Campbell is great, and I think it's great that he was doing the Last in Line tour and really bringing these songs back up into the public domain, whether how big or small that is. I know they're probably playing a lot of smaller gigs, but it was still – the fans there were loving it from what I could see. It was just great seeing all those awesome riffs, like straight to the heart. And it's just awesome. I like some of the stuff that really didn't get played on the radio a whole lot. And it's great. I just, the tone, the riffs and everything. I mean, Straight to the Heart's probably my favorite. Shame on the Night is another one. It's just amazing. And you can go on YouTube. This video's kind of danced around a few times, but there's a video where, Doug Aldrich, he was the, I believe, was the last guitarist to be in the band before Ronnie James Dio passed away in 2010. And there's a live
stomach cancer, right?
He was 67 years old, and he's the same age as my mom. I didn't realize he was born a few months younger. So, but yeah, and when he passed, I was bummed. I was very sad because his voice was amazing, his songwriting skills were amazing, and I didn't always necessarily agree or care for some of the subject matter in the songs, but as a singer, as a musician, he was always good to his fans. You gotta appreciate that. You know, not everyone's gonna do everything that you agree with, but if you take the good from the bad, huge loss to the musical community and influence to a lot of people.
Yeah, I was gonna say he was really influential, and he, as we're talking about today, you know, he's worked with a lot of great guitar players, and it's interesting. Yeah. I've heard some people compare him to, well, you know, he kind of did the same thing Ozzy did, right? He went and played, sang for Black Sabbath. Ozzy played for Black, you know, Sabbath. And then he's worked with all these great guitar players after that and kind of, you know, was doing that aspect of it too. But he definitely, it for me, you know, Rainbow in the Dark, you know, that album was very prevalent. I'm a little bit older than you. And
Yeah,
I
it was
do
a
know
Holy
about,
Diver album. Yeah.
yeah, and that was, you know, when you're listening to metal music and rock music and you're listening to that stuff in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s, a lot of that stuff for me, and I still know about those tapes that you're talking about where they put the notch out of it, because I used to buy tapes too,
Yeah.
until CDs became a thing, right? And then more
Right.
prominent anyway in the you know, dispersion of them for the masses to take on and buy. But stuff like that, you would see when like MTV came out, you know, you finally see Ronnie James Dio. They get a little bit more exposure than they would just on radio play. And, you know, radio play is a completely different topic we'll have to get into another podcast
Oh,
because
yeah.
it's just, yeah, it's the turd that won't flush in some cases. But, you know, when you start getting exposed to that stuff, you realize some of the things that he actually was involved with and some of the musicians and the bands and his career, and not necessarily comparing, but just kind of following in Ozzy's footsteps, because he definitely was, you know, his voice is unique, it's influential. He worked with just a ton of people, like I mentioned before. I think he had some different bands. Elf, he was in that
Oh
one.
yes. Oh yeah. Very,
Yep.
very bluesy. That was really a blues band. Lots of piano being played too. That's funny.
Yeah.
You brought up Elf. That's fantastic.
Yeah, Rainbow, you know, Heaven and Hell, stuff like that. A lot of people just don't necessarily know because, you know, his main focus and most people that know him for is like Rainbow in the Dark, right? When you hear that song.
Well, 'cause those
But
are that was a multi-platinum album. So was
yeah.
Last in Line his follow-up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's the thing. You hit the nail on the head when you said that, like, people don't really recognize his other work. It's like, man, I've never really heard a bad album from the guy. And he had an Craig Goldie was a guitarist that who's amazing, and I really liked his stuff as well. And the thing was that, you know, he was a guy who self-admitted. He said, you know, Ronnie James Dio brought him, gave him a shot, and he's always thankful for that. And I think that's great. Is So it kind of shows that he's the kind of guy, he's like recognizes talent and he's like willing to go and yeah, let's see what you can do, and it's great. And so I think that when you've got someone that like that that's able to surround themselves with such excellent talent, and it's I will say there are some singers, I won't say names, that they surround themselves with excellent musicians because they can't sing. I will That's a known thing, at least back. Well, to everyone plays the tape on auto tunes now, so I guess that's not even a problem. And no one plays real music anyway now live besides the people that have already been doing it. But
Stinky auto-tune.
yeah, it's
Ugh.
garbage. You know what, folks? Learn how to freaking sing. You know, that's all I can say about that. It's appalling. Anyway, so yeah, there's that. And then there's also another guitarist, which is really good, was Tracy G. And I used to have a live album. He was on there, and there's a whole guitar solo segment on that, and it was amazing. And he was another guitarist that largely is not really known, either in metal or outside of that, that I'm aware of. That and he was just phenomenal. Dio could just find these guys; they're just incredible, you know. Not only that, his keyboard players, his drummer Rudy Sarzo, his bass player, it's
Rudy,
just
yeah,
great. You
absolutely.
know, he had unfortunately Jimmy Bain passed away. He was a His bassist on a several records, and that poor guy. I saw him on there. He died on a cruise. There was a. I don't know if it was. I don't know if it's a Monsters of Rock cruise necessarily. It was one that like Kip Winger and a bunch of other guys were on. This was about 3 or 4 years ago, and they were out to sea. And
It's probably a Monsters of Rock tour.
yeah, some.
There, a lot of bands are doing that now, which I think is really kind of cool, where you can see a bunch of awesome bands, you know, on one ship, and you got 3 or 4 days, and they play music. You can see awesome bands, awesome musicians, and
I'd
get
love
kind
to
of a
do
trip out
that.
of it. Yeah, I haven't
Yeah,
been, but I'd
someday I'd
love
like to
to.
do that. Oh yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing is I saw the guy play his last gig. I mean, that guy was barely standing up. I was like, you know what? My heart goes out to you, man, because you sat there and you played. You played the whole set under extreme pain, and I could barely move. It broke my heart. And but it was amazing. All the band members were super cool with him, and I just, yeah, that was a hard thing to see. But the guy was a trooper, and he went out there and he played. If that isn't a testament to a musician, I don't know what is. And at the end of the day, when you're going and playing out live gigs, you're there to entertain people. And when you see that, he's giving it his all. That says a lot about his character. A lot of guys would have just gone and said, well, I feel sick, pull an Axl Rose and just leave because you want to go watch the Knicks game. Here's a guy on his deathbed.
So your voice is trash? Yeah.
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 Here's a guy on his deathbed, and he's going out there and playing this stuff.
And Mick Mars is another guitar player that, you know, not a lot of people know that he's had some issues health-wise for a long time.
Decades.
And he goes out there and tears it up. I've got to see them at least once that I can remember off the top of my head. And he just, you know, he does his thing. And it looks like he can barely move, but he's just out there enjoying it. And I think you're hitting a thing for me, in my opinion, with a lot of these guitar players and the people that, you know, Dio's played with. You know, a lot of these people, it just enjoy music for, you know, like you're saying, when you watched or you heard Vivian Campbell playing, these people just enjoy music, right? They enjoy their craft. They enjoy what they do, and they enjoy going and playing. It's not just a job. It's not just, yeah, I got to go out and entertain just to entertain. These people, you know, they're involved in it mentally, physically. It's at that higher level, spiritual level, I guess, if you want to call it that, yeah, that calls them to it. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, even a lot of people might know Deep Purple. You know, Ritchie Blackmore was the other guitarist I was going to bring up in the list of things who he played with too. And it's just massive amount of talent, especially for, you know, the late 70s and a lot of the music, the rock music, if you will, that was coming out during that, before the, if you want to call hair bands, if people are still calling it that, or butt rock. A lot of people term the 80s music that as well. Yeah. I think a lot of people forget, or maybe they just don't know because they're used to what they're hearing now. But a lot of these people and a lot of the guitar players from the late 70s or 70s and 60s, and even into the 80s, their craft of what they could do, how they play, and their approach to music is phenomenally way more deep, in my opinion, than what you started getting in the late 90s into the 2000s, where it was all about the radio play. You know, it wasn't, I have to go in a studio and I have to do this song in one take. You know, now that you have digital editing, which is, it's got its pros and cons like everything else, but you can kind of piecemeal songs together, right? And these people in their craft back in the 70s, they had real tape. You had to play it from front to back until you got it right. Or, and you know, in Dio's case, or singers, you had to sing it, and you had to sing it through the whole entire time. So they really knew their craft and they knew it well. And I think you definitely see a lot of difference now in radio play. But like I said, we'll save that for another topic. But these people, yeah, that, you know, guitar players, going back on that topic again, sorry, I go on tangents.
Yeah, I did the whole show so far.
these people are, you know, they're lovers of their craft, and they're good at what they do. And I think you're absolutely right. He had a knack for working with people that were talent and could bring that into what he was doing.
Yeah, and that's, man, he's always like, his stuff and some of those guitarists and everything, they're kind of like that whole sound that he had. There's a, in that live album that I mentioned earlier, it was great. There's a extended section where the musicians get to do at least the keyboards and the guitars do. There's a section for some solos and some segues there, and they use Shame on a Night for that. And it was like, it was just amazing, because then the band kicks in and there's a segment where they just do this jam. It was just, it was characteristic of his sound, of Dio's sound that he had forged with the various musicians he had. And it just, like, wow, it makes me want to go get a Les Paul and tune it down a half step and just play those riffs. And between the bass and the drums and the keyboards and the guitar, it was just perfect. And there's an aggression to it, but it's like artistic aggression. And it's not reckless aggression like punk music or anything. It's like the note selection just hits you hard. Those chords and all of the subtle nuances of what they're doing are just the perfect recipe for metal. And he's one of those guys. I will go out and say he's probably the best metal musician I've ever come across as far as his work. The guy just had it down. He puts Ozzy to shame.
Yeah, he definitely knew his craft and knew it well. And
well, he didn't lose his mind in drugs and booze.
He was definitely focused more on the music than he was in the getting caught up in the, I guess if you want to call it, fame of the entertainment business that
right
kind of comes along with some of that. You know, he was, to me, you know, and this is, like I said, is my opinion, I think he was definitely more focused on writing and knowing how to write the metal music that he was doing, especially for the time, right? I mean, metal music, you know, Black Sabbath back then was like, oh my gosh, you know, this is the heaviest stuff we ever have. And it seems like every year, you know, there's something that comes out that's, you know, oh, this is heavier than those people. Oh, this is heavier. This person took the crown for being heavy. It's like,
they're missing the point.
You got to understand where it's coming from, right? Mm-hmm. You got to understand the evolution of what you're listening to and where it came from and who was influencing who and how those people that are in those bands that you're saying like took the reign for heavy metal, where did they get their influences from? And I guarantee you a lot of people are going to look back and they're going to say, you know, they're going to bring up Dio. They're going to bring up a lot of these guitar players. You know, you can't think of 70s music without thinking about, you know, Ritchie Blackmore and, you know, some of the music that came out from Deep Purple. A lot of people, you know, bring that up as being influential for what, you know, even Metallica, Kirk Hammett's brought that up. So, I think that Dio definitely focused more, like I was saying, on his craft. I think he kind of focused more on the people around him when he was doing various bands and, you know, bringing that talent together.
Yeah, like Graham Bonnet and stuff. You had Graham Bonnet and Rainbow.
Yeah.
Since you've been gone, that relationship did not last very long. And what I would like to do, you bring up a very good topic for another episode. And Glenn Hughes, the guy is a mammoth singer. Him and Dio are the top two for me. And wow. I mean, not only the guy's a great bass player, but he's the whole frontman package. I thought it was great. And I want to do another episode with Glenn Hughes, but the whole Deep Purple thing. You gave me two future topics, Ben, as you were talking. I wrote that. And so
awesome. Well, I think I don't think we'll ever have, you know, not have topics to talk about. There's just so many different things you can focus on in music. You know, obviously today we're talking about Dio and guitar players and that he's worked with, but there's so many different other facets and topics that you can spawn off and go down a rabbit trail as we do in our sessions here on our podcast. But I did want to bring up that we had mentioned Queensryche in a podcast the other day. He actually did do a song before he passed away on the Operation Mindcrime 2 album, which I thought that song itself was pretty cool, that he made him Professor X in the whole story arc. And when I got to go and see them play it live, I didn't get to see, you know, Dio actually sing it, but they had him in the video playing in the back behind the band. And it was just, mm-hmm. It's cool to see that kind of stuff. I like collaboration between different musicians in bands when they can do that. I always thought that was neat, right? Because you have this camaraderie of just, hey, we're musicians and we're all making music. So let's get together and let's have this person as a guest on a song. You know, let's have this other person come in and play guitar on this song. I always thought that was cool in the music community when you saw stuff like that, which just,
oh yeah. Like Dream On with Dio and Malmsteen.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It is. It kind of, to go back to the people that he chose and worked with, it kind of goes back to that. In my opinion, it's like, he knew he had talent as a vocalist, right? And bands come and go. They come around and sometimes they fall apart and people move on. But the people that are in the music business because they enjoy music altogether, they find other people to play with, right? You didn't see Slash quit because, you know, Axl decided to go and, you know, gain 300 pounds, keep drinking and, you know, lose his voice. you know, Slash kept playing because he enjoyed the music, and that's what he was into, and that's what he wanted to keep doing overall. I mean, obviously these guys got themselves in some pretty dark places and into certain things, but you
hazards of the industry.
Yeah, it's not all fortune and glory, as Indiana Jones would say, right? There's a definite dark side. If you are striving so hard, you can definitely sell your soul and get yourself into some pretty nasty places.
Absolutely. Well, and that's some of the subject matter, even of the Black Sabbath stuff. Like Tony Iommi, he said that, like, you know, people don't understand their songs. If anything, we're actually warning against those kind of things, not celebrating them or encouraging them. And a lot of Dio stuff was the same way. It was, you need to be wary of these things and stay away from them. He's bringing awareness to the fact that these things are around and you need to keep your nose clean.
Yeah.
And
is that when you played the record backwards? Did you hear all that? That special message? One to grow.
Well, yeah, Pink Floyd, you know, it's play it backwards and it's the Wizard.
Oh, yeah, that one synced up with the Wizard of Oz, the specific one. But yeah, I think a lot of
I'm not saying any of these people are like saints or anything. I'm just saying that this is their own words. Was that, if anything, it was warning against, you know, getting into that stuff.
Well, a lot of people, you know, the symbolism, I think you're bringing up a great topic, because symbolism can, you know, obviously have a huge effect on people. If you were to go and you were to pick up a, you know, different Dio albums, not necessarily every cover art that he had on it, you'd probably be like, man, I'm not going to listen to this. I mean, this looks creepy. Like I should, you know, I should just draw a pentagram on my floor and start lighting candles if I buy this album.
Like I said, there's things that they did that I don't agree with. I don't think I would be using cover. Hey, great art, but the subject of the art it's creepy. It's like the Dream Evil album. Oh my gosh, there's that demon thing outside the window.
Yeah.
And the kid's sleeping.
But if you look at that, obviously it was the shock content that they were trying to sell a lot of the art, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, they haven't seen this before. Like, oh, this will be catchy, or like, this
record
will get
company
someone's
decision.
On.
Yeah.
Right, you know, and I think if you look past that kind of stuff, and like you're saying, you look at the context at some of the music and listen to the lyrics, which I know a lot of people that do listen to lyrics, and they're like, man, you know, let me figure out what this person's really trying to say. Other people just listen to it and they're like, oh yeah, cool, I'll sing along with it, but they don't really try to understand the content. And
they should.
Like, you absolutely should, because that's their musical instrument that they're trying to communicate with, right? Is their vocals and their language that they're using.
And I will say though too, like, there's a song that Dio did off the, I think it wasn't Angry Machines. I'm trying to remember. It's a song called Hollywood Black, and Strange Highways was the album. One of the best songs on there. That was probably the heaviest album he ever did, but it was called Hollywood Black. And it was talking about how rotten and evil Hollywood is. You know, Hollywood Black caught in the middle. I mean, it's terrible. But he was saying that's how Hollywood is. And that's an example of right there what I was talking about, where he's like, hey, this is what's going on, folks. So there's another song called Pain, and it's about drug addiction. How you need to, you know, it's describing someone who's hooked on that stuff and what it does to them. And he wasn't into that. He didn't do drugs that I'm aware of. But he wrote a song about it because it's horrible what it does to you. You just stay away from it, you know. And I like the riffs. That's one of the tones. As a musician, I like some of the musical mechanisms that he had his unit employed. And I can't disregard that, and I can't ignore it, because you could take ideas and take some of the cool things about any artist, if they have those, he definitely has a lot of them, and say, you know what, that's a cool tone, or I like what they did with the rhythm section with the drums and bass being so tight, and I like keyboard cascades over this, or how it didn't diminish from the heaviness, it actually enhanced the overall sound, it just made it sound bigger, you know.
Yeah, good songwriting, good compilations, and definitely people that took their time understanding, you know, the music itself, the, you know, how to approach it, where to go with it. I mean, and I think we've talked about songwriting. If not, we definitely need to do another podcast on that one. But, you know, people that would take their time and do it right. I mean, back in the day, you actually had to put a full album out that was killer from front to back, you know, that had good songs and not just have filler. And nowadays it's like you, well, now you can buy songs individually. So are you doing a full album? Are you not doing a full album? So definitely a shift in the music industry from when they were doing, starting out and doing what they were doing. And so you had to kind of focus on your craft. You had to know what you were doing. You had to focus on the music because you're honestly not just trying to put out stuff to put it out. You put it out because you are trying to get people interested in what you were doing.
Yeah, and I think too, along with that is the fact that if you wrote music that was very rich and maybe complicated is not the right word in my opinion, but some people be like, well, this is a lot to digest or something, even if it's an instrumental track. It's like, I think that people have such a short attention span on some of this. They're like, I don't want to get into this. They're not going to say it out loud, but they'll be like, I just want to listen to something quick and snappy off the radio. It's like they're it's gone. That is gone. The whole quest, there's not a lot of people looking for this stuff. Stuff that, like, you know, that's a shame. It's a shame. Sometimes you wonder, this is kind of a sidebar, but I personally always wonder is like, why are people so either they're not one, they're not aware that the stuff is around, like you can go listen to stuff. Despite having it at your fingertips on the internet, they pirate everything and put it on YouTube, even if it's a brand new album. You put out like a Joe Satriani album day after, maybe the next day you'll find it on YouTube or even before that. And but still, after all of this, you can see all the Dio stuff on there. You can see all these concerts they did. I mean, it's endless. But they still don't know. It's like guys are calling the Eddie Trunk show and say, "Hey, what's you know, I haven't heard a lot from Stryper lately. What are they?" And did Eddie Trunk would lose it. He's like, "They're touring right now."
Yeah, go out there and
It,
use your
it's.
use the internet, use the tools that you have to find these people.
Yeah.
They're still out there writing. They're still doing everything. I mean,
Turn your brains on and go look.
I mean, I get notifications, and you know, I this is kind of where I get a lot of my news stuff from too. So I'm sure a lot of people that you know that might listen to this or do listen to it are like, oh yeah, he just got it off from Loudwire. He got the information from the internet. I'm like, well, yeah, that information is out there for you to
Gotta
go
get
and
it from
find. You know,
somewhere. Yeah.
and. The thing is the reason I bring this stuff up in our podcast is because people might not know to go and look for it, right? So,
Yeah, that's true. That's
you
true.
know, that's why I bring it up. That's why I talk about the news, you know, usually at the beginning of every show, just because, you know what? There might be something I say that someone might not have thought of. You know, wingers out there, hate them or love them, you know, depending if you were
They're
more of a
awesome
Metallica
musicians.
fan and watch them throw darts at Kip Winger's head in the picture, but, you know.
I'd rather listen to Winger any day of the week over Metallica. Metallica does nothing for me. You know, it's
I
just
have
nothing.
one name, Red Beach. Sold.
Reb. Oh.
Sold. Done. It's done and done. You know, I
Oh
mean,
man.
I
You just
appreciate the fact
wow.
Kirk Hammett was trained, you know, and took lessons from Joe Satriani at one point. But you know what?
Wow.
Red Beach is, he's a different caliber guitar player. You know,
Yeah.
he just, the way he approaches writing, the way that he does it. And by all means, I like Metallica. I like Kirk Hammett. I like his style of what he does, but it's different. And it's just like I said, there's a certain thing that you lock into that's yours. Kirk Hammett does his thing. Reb Beach, in my opinion, he does his thing, but you
Man,
know, I would listen to
that
Reb
guy's
Beach.
off the charts.
It's a he's amazing.
There's a live he now for people that probably aren't aware, at least some people, most people, he did a stint in Dokken. So George Lynch was out because Don Dokken and George Lynch couldn't get along at the time. They've patched things up now. They're kind of over it. They're kind of older now, and they're like, hey, what's the you know, life's short. Let's just get together and jam. And it's great. So that's a separate show. Anyway, Reb Beach was in. He was actually started out as a session player, did a lot of session stuff when he was a kid doing soundtracks. The guy is so talented, even as a like a teenager, he was doing some things in Hollywood. It's great. And because I read an article about that. And but he got a stint in Dokken for a while and he was fantastic. And then it was either him or and it was John Norum, who's another fantastic guitar player from Sweden. Oh my gosh. John Norum. Wow. Yeah, anyway. There's a song that they did called Too High to Fly, which is off of the, I think it's Shadowlands album, which is a song, which was the last album at that time that George Lynch had played on. And there's a song called Too High to Fly. And again, it's about drugs and staying away from the drugs. Don't get involved in it, you know? And, you know, Too High to Fly. In other words, you're killing yourself if you get into that stuff. And so the live solo that's on there is just incredible. He's got, I mean, Reb Beach took this mid-range guitar. It's like usually he's playing the really nice custom-made stuff, Carino Woods and all, like the Sur guitars and all that. But he had an Ibanez Roadstar, which was a kind of a middle-range guitar that Ibanez had in the mid-80s. And he just totally did this amazing solo with it, the whammy bridge and all that stuff. And he just did this sound effect at the end of it. It just, you know, it's something to do with delay and just the way he was able to, he used a lot of heavy chorus on there and doing two-handed tapping and just doing a really cool pentatonic run. And it was just amazing. And I just incredible. When I saw that guy do that, I'm like, this guy is off the charts. This in his own, for his own, he rules and owns his sound.
His and tapping just, is so like, it's
yeah,
so
it's keyboard-esque. Yeah.
It's smooth, I guess is the best way I can explain it. Cause you have a lot of people that tap and it this makes sense.
They just don't have the gusto. Yeah.
It's the way that the finger is sliding almost just like slightly when he's hitting the strings. That's almost like he's not hammering on it really hard when he's doing the tapping. So it's fluid. It's smooth.
There's no tension there.
No, it's like ice, man. It's
yeah. And that was the thing. Like if you see him ever play live, especially in the solo I had mentioned, Not Too High to Fly, he wraps his thumb around the back of the neck when he bends the strings. Mm-hmm. It just all of that. Like you said, he's just, in my opinion, he's kind of like, he's got a lot. He's as effortless when I saw, like, you know, you see live instances of Hendrix playing, how he was just so flute. Like it was just, the instrument was part of him. Uh-huh. And Red Beach is definitely one of those people. Same thing with Doug Aldrich. In fact, Doug Aldrich and Red Beach played together in Whitesnake several years ago. And I should have gone to the fair. They had a county fair that was here, and I couldn't go because I was sick. And I'll always kill myself because Dave Coverdale was on the vocals, and those two were soloing duels every gig.
We're gonna loop it back here.
Sorry.
I'm going to let you finish your statement, but we're going to loop it back because guess who Red Beach has also played with? Who's also played in Whitesnake? Who also played with Dio?
Let me think.
Vivian Campbell?
When did he play with Vivian Campbell? Which gig?
Didn't he play in Whitesnake with Vivian Campbell? Because Vivian Campbell was in Whitesnake, right?
No.
He wasn't? I swear to God, I thought he played in Whitesnake. All right.
No, it's always been Phil Colin, Steve Clark when he was around, and then it was when Steve Clark passed away, Vivian Campbell took his spot. But Phil Collins always been the one of the guitarists in Def Leppard.
All right, I don't know my facts. I will take that back and do some more, because I swear to God, I thought he was. I don't know why. Maybe I was hoping. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. You can always hope, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I will say, and I'll throw this out there, because when we did the show dedicated to Queensryche, I was talking about the wrong album. I wasn't even talking about what was the album we were talking about before? It was like their second album that they did, and I was talking about the completely wrong album. I misstated which album I was talking about, so don't feel bad.
No, he did. He played with Whitesnake.
When?
Yep. I'm trying to find out exactly
the dates. No, we were talking about Def Leppard, dude.
Yeah, Vivian Campbell
played with Def Leppard. You're talking about Red Beach playing in Def Leppard? He never played in Def
Leppard. No. I was saying Loop It Back, who also played in Whitesnake. Campbell played in Whitesnake. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in the 80s. Because he never did an album. Like, he didn't record with them. But he was in the video. He was actually in the music videos, but he never actually played physically on the albums. Because what happened was, is Adrian Vandenberg was ill, and it was before Steve Vai joined. So they had this. They had kind of some ships passing in the night there, if you will. Some rotating members, because Adrian Vandenberg got ill, and John Sykes was out at that point. He was gone. Him and Coverdale had a falling out. And so it was Vivian Campbell, and there was another guitarist. Maybe Adrian Vandenberg was in the band at the time, but John Sykes left. He got kicked out. Adrian Vandenberg was the replacement for John Sykes. And then Vivian Campbell joined. And then he went and started a band. Vivian Campbell started a band called, there's a song that they did called Toy Soldiers, and I'm trying to remember, the River Dogs. He created a band called the River Dogs after he was in Whitesnake, yeah.
Okay, so I guess my question then would be, so he never played with Reb Beach then?
No.
Okay, but at least I was accurate that he did play in Whitesnake, and then also Reb Beach played in Whitesnake. So that's where I was trying to make the connection with Dio, and our topic for today was these, 7 degrees of Dio, in essence, of guitar players, like who's played with who, right? And
Yeah, it was
who's
quite the
played in other
whirlwind.
bands.
Well, I'm glad that Vivian Campbell's still around because he had lymphoma, I believe. He had gone through treatment of that. He was bald there for a while, but I think
Crazy.
he beat cancer, which is great. I mean, and there's a lot of excellent players out there that have survived a lot of serious illnesses, and it's great they're still around because as a fan, you're like, you guys are a musical pillar for us. And I mean, all musicians, whether they're professional or they're just, well, you got like people that just, well, I just like to bang around at home or whatever. And that's fine. That's great. But everyone's a fan of someone at some point because how do you think they wanted to get involved in the first place? Because there's players that they looked up to.
Influential. Yep,
Right.
absolutely.
So there's, it's,
Yeah, he's
yeah.
got Hodgkin's and he still has it. He's still doing treatment for it. So,
Oh, is he? Okay.
yeah, hopefully he can beat that beast, man. Because that's
Yeah.
not
It's
good. It'd
a
be another person that would be not wanting to leave the music industry. Some of these people are, I don't know. They're iconic in what they've, given and approached, like you're saying. And I think a lot of musicians nowadays would do themselves a big favor by just listening to some of the approaches and styles of these people.
Yeah, I know. And it's, I mean, everyone's human. We get older and stuff. We wear out and, things don't work anymore. It's, but at the end of the day, we do have to remember, these people are all human beings. They have problems. They're not gods or anything. They're not invincible. So I think it's also important thing to remember that if you're someone who thinks, well, I could never play like that or whatever, that's not true. It's called practice. And it's important not to elevate people up to a pedestal where they're untouchable because, as a fan, that's going to be even harder for you if something happens to players you really like. And I think it's important that you see it as like they're giving their part, their legacy, their contribution to the musical world. And we need to see it as like, look at these unique players that are out there and really celebrate them, whether they're around or not. And it's like, yeah, we want people to be around, but it's like, let's, celebrate the music and celebrate the stamp that they left if they're no longer with us and really draw strength from that and draw joy from focus on the joy of the music. And music's a very powerful thing. You can either, some people, they take it the wrong way and it can hurt them. But for me personally, music's always been an immense help and it's been something to soothe the soul. It's something to get you psyched up and excited about something. You can really like, oh, what kind of gear is he using? This is so cool. There's so many facets of like real musicianship that I just love. And it's the music is just like, it's the icing. It's the cherry on the sundae, man. It's just, wow. And, but then there's all these cool things like, oh, how do you do this? There's recording. There's, and all these people, what they've been able to do. And some of them, like in Randy Rhoads' case, a very short period of time, 24 years old, or, and it's just like,
And still, look, he's iconic. People still know him. People still talk about him, and still people, are like, "Oh my God, he was an amazing guitar player." It's like, well, how many years now has it been? So I think the people that really like you and me that are really, really into music, we have an appreciation for that, and hopefully people
We
will
don't have
listen
a
to this stuff
choice,
and go,
Ben. We have to be.
"I know, I can't quit it. It's my drug."
Never gonna happen.
Yeah. So, hopefully the people that we're bringing up, you guys will go and check them out, or see what they have to offer that you might be interested in that you might not thought of. I mean, there's, I have to admit there's some country songs that people have brought to my attention that, not that I listen to country very often or go out and seek it, not that it's good or bad, it's just not my, it's just not my bag, baby. But there's ones out there that kind of stand out to me. I know Garth Brooks is a huge. People love
Don't
Garth
mention
Brooks,
his
man.
alter ego. He'll show up.
Oh, the rock album that he put out? Shh, we don't talk about it. Yeah,
Oh, his
there's
alter ego, the name of his alter ego. We don't mention it. It's
yeah.
verboten. Happened to me. It happened to me on Twitter. No joke.
Well, you know, I find things that even that he's written that are sonically and musically, you know, I'm just like, man, that was a well put together song. You know, the approach to it, how it was written, you know, Vocal Society, even, you know, it just, it's a well composed song. And Alter Ego, sang it or not, it's good to listen to different various types of music, and we've mentioned that before, because a lot of these, a lot of people have a lot to bring. And unfortunately, if I could, I would listen to as many people as I possibly could, because there's probably people that are sitting in their home that are, they're writing their own music and they're really striving to put something good out, like, and it's a shame.
I'm not ashamed. I'm a fan, and I'm not ashamed.
Well, you know, there we go. It's
talented young man.
Yeah, and hopefully those people will have an opportunity to be able to share that stuff out, which is why I like Reverb Nation. You can find a lot of good stuff on there, and it's not a plug for that website, but you know, you can find a lot of good musicians that aren't just being pushed on radio. And I know it's a different topic for a different day. But you know, definitely seek out some of these people just to see what they've got. You might find yourself, you know, diving down the rabbit hole into everything they've done, like Vivian Campbell, or even if it loops back to you and you, you know, Richie Blackwood, you want to start listening to Deep Purple and you hear some of this music that was great in the 70s that, you know, to me, I'm just like, man, that was very influential at the time, you know? So
yeah, I had a guy that I used to play this while I occasionally play it. Lord of the Rings Online, I played it when I was younger, and there was a guy, I used to talk to these guys from Long Island, and this one guy was a hardcore Richie Blackmore fan. Now, this guy could have totally been pulling my leg, okay? But he's like, oh, I love Richie Blackmore, and, you know, I go to his Halloween parties, and he doesn't want to talk about music. He won't talk about it. That's business, like that. And I'm like, this guy could totally be pulling my leg, but, you know, it's just like there's some people are just like totally enthralled with a particular musician style, like, you're the greatest guitarist ever, Richie Blackmore, you know. And I think that everyone brings their own slice to the table, you know. And
yeah, think, make it a rainbow cake, right? Don't just eat off a chocolate mousse cake and say this is all that's there music wise and guitar player wise. You know, try to go out
there.
I'm
more of a sheet cake guy myself, so.
Yeah, you know, I like the cheesecake because you can put whatever flavor you want on top, right?
True West Coaster in your cheesecake. Don't put cream cheese on my freaking cinnamon rolls.
You're missing out.
Throw that in the trash.
Come on now.
And no pineapple on the pizza. After that, it used to be a pizza. It's no longer pizza at that point. Just
now it's just
throw
fruit.
It in the garbage. You contaminated my cheese.
Just why? That's why? Why did you? Why? Did
you Canadian bacon is not bacon. Thank you.
You put meat on it. Put meat. Put pepperoni on it. But
right. Eat like a man. We're not gonna skirt the edge. You tack that pizza like a Klingon.
Oh, you love meat. You will eat it. Yes,
Rolf
absolutely.
Targ. Yes. we derailed. All right.
Yeah, we did. All right, I'm going to bring up a couple things in the news here.
Sure, yeah, let's hear the news, yeah.
So Parker Lundgren quit Queensryche. I know that we didn't know what was going on with their drummer. Still don't know what's going on with the original drummer, Scott Rockenfield. But Parker quit so he can continue doing coffee shops and music stores that he had opened during the time. So, good luck, Parker. You know, you had, to me, because I'm a huge Queensryche fan, one of the best jobs in the world, but, you know, whatever.
It probably pays better, nowadays. But.
Yeah, but you're playing music. Yeah, maybe you're playing live.
So people just get sick of it. I don't know. Maybe he's just taking a hiatus. And
no, he's done. They got totally Mike Stone done. Back. Yeah, he's done. He's quit.
He pulled a John Deacon. He just totally.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to go sell a guitar.
Bass player. You know, yeah. He said, I'm done.
Jeff LaBar, passed away,
yeah.
58.
Man,
I don't know if all those Cinderella guitarists, for those that liked Cinderella, I did.
They had not been active in quite a while, actually. Tom Kiefer, the lead singer, doing very well on his solo material he's been touring on.
Yeah, I was going to say Tom Kiefer's been still doing his stuff, which is cool. And, you know, I appreciate his vocal style. So for all those Cinderella people Absolutely. Out there that might not have known, Jeff LaBar has been passed away now. Mark Tremonti, new solo album. I'm excited for this one. I'm a huge Mark Tremonti fan. I bring him up quite a bit just because I think he's one of those people that is like me. You can never learn enough. There's no way you can cram it all in your brain. In fact, he has brought up the one of the people that, Justin, you're lucky enough to work with and know in your guitar lessons. I'll let you talk about that if you want to. But he's influenced by people that you work with. He's dropping a new song from that album. It's called If Not For You. Go check it out. It is really cool. Really cool. The mix, the quality of the music on it is really just killer. Another thing I wanted to bring up is, I think I'm saying his last name wrong, so please correct me. I butcher names. Rick Beato, is that right?
Rick Beato.
Rick Beato, thank you. Sorry, Rick. Not trying to be rude.
Atlanta-based producer, yes.
He brought up. I watched a video about strings and string sounds and how it affects your recording, and I wanted to bring up one thing that he had said in there, and he actually had gone through, and you can look this video up on your spare time if you want. They recorded the same riffs from three different people using various different levels of strings, and to see what the recording sounded like afterwards on each style of those strings. And he proved in there that if you use a lighter gauge of strings, like they used to use back in the 70s, which was nines, exclusively, a lot of people use nines back then in studio work, it tightens up your sound immensely. So I know a lot of people nowadays, they use tens, or they like, oh, the heavier the string gauge, the heavier the sound. If you're looking to tighten up your recordings, bump your gauge strings up a bit. It'll actually tighten
up that
noise.
Yeah, they won't be so floppy. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I definitely thought that was worth bringing up. So
especially if you're a heavy-handed guitarist like me. If you're Wreck-It Ralph, I tend to be.
Wreck-It Ralph. Sorry, I can see you, and I've seen your hands, and I've seen you play. So to me, it's like, okay, that's funny. Anyway, sorry.
Good for three more boils. Check out that episode, everybody. Three more boils.
Three more boils.
The New York Archives.
Is there anything else you wanted to bring up music-wise that cover the topics today? Any kind of news that you have that you've heard of that I might not have said?
Oh, let me skim the there is one. There's a YouTuber, his name is the Guitologist, I believe. I think he's over in might be over in Tennessee somewhere. I don't remember. But he had some I used to watch his show a lot because he does I still will, but I generally haven't been doing a lot of clickbait type YouTube stuff because I don't care for that. But everybody does it. But he did a lot of guitar amp repair stuff, and the guy knows his stuff. I mean, the guy's brilliant as the repair guy and a heck of a great guitar player in his own right. And I tend to appreciate what he has to say. I really do. And sometimes he goes a little extreme, but he's got a cool channel. But I guess he got in some kind of trouble, and so he's got some legal things going on. I won't get into it. You can watch his videos and see what it is, but hopefully he pulls through that. And there's a lot of people on a fever pitch right now just because of all the crap that's going on. But yeah, he's kind of got some hot water going on, I guess. What else? I think that I know with the Delta variant stuff going on, there's some artists that had put plans in for tours that are questioning whether they got to push things out again. I know that's something just across the board that's, a concern. And because I know there's a lot of bands that have been out scheduled like May, February, March, and then this next spring, getting out doing things is probably, a far enough swath out there where they could probably be all right. We'll see what happens to live music, because I know that that's just something in the music news that I'm aware of. So, yeah, we'll see how things play out. Everything's going to work out. It always does. And things will iron out, and we'll be able to enjoy ourselves again. So, until then, practice your guitar. Sit in the house or practice whatever instrument it is. Practice. If you don't have anywhere to go, and depending on where you live, if you're locked down, as they say, practice your instrument. Listen to some music. Use that time to enjoy what you like to play. You learn something new, listen to some other styles. Like Ben was saying earlier, it's, you know, for me, I like a lot of fusion stuff. I like, whether it's Jeff Beck or if, some of his early stuff with Jan Hammer, or if it's Alan Holdsworth or any of that. Go listen to some different styles of music, man, because you'll find some cool stuff. And take this time to practice that and enjoy music. Because, you know, normally people always complain they don't have time. Well, you got the time now, so what's your problem? So.
Yeah, and I guess to add on to that would be, you know, if you're looking to do this seriously and you're looking to get better at stuff, you know, would I be happy with a half hour of practice? Well, I got my fingers moving. You know, I'd be a lot more happier with 2 hours of practice, you know, on a daily if I could, to excel and keep your fingers warmed up and keep yourself moving in a forward direction. Because like everything else, if you don't practice it and you don't, you know, continually do it, you know, not that you'll lose the you know, functionality of being able to play guitar, but, you know, your fingers won't move as quick because your muscles will, you know, grow out of being in that functioning state and stretched out in the same way that you would normally do if you were practicing 2 hours, you know, to an hour and a half every day. But, you know, definitely take the time to do it. You know, practice.
Yeah, and I won't stop practicing until I have it perfect, up to speed the way it needs to be, and it's clean. And if it takes me 10, 15 years to work on one thing to get it perfect, I'm going to do that. And I make it fit. A half hour for me is not good enough. I have to do at least an hour and a half, 2 hours.
And if, you know, if you're getting frustrated trying to learn something new,
put the guitar down and then cool down, yeah.
Or go on to something else. You know, for me.
Right.
and what I mean by that is, put the guitar down, but play rhythm chords. Find new chords to play, right? Practice those. Practice your timing. One thing that I picked up on an interview that Mark Tremonti did was, you know, one of the first things he does, and he does in his clinics, so he'll tell you this if you go to one of his clinics, is you put your metronome to 105, and then you take that, you know, D or drop D string, whatever you're doing, and then you hammer on it. You get that tempo going, and you play, and you play, and you play, and you just keep you playing that tempo and keep playing it. He goes,
Get
your timing down. It gets your wrist working, and it gets you playing fast. So that way, when, you know, if you replace something slower, it's easy. And then if you play something faster, just keep practicing it and keep playing it and keep playing it. And you'll find that it gets easier and easier, right? When you go back, because your motion, you know, like anything, your mind will remember, your muscles will remember, right?
You'd be surprised. Yeah. Cause you'd be struggling with it that one day, getting frustrated about it. The next morning when you wake up, or the next day, you play the next day, you'd be amazed what your brain does. Like, wow, I just did it like no problem. Yesterday I was struggling with this. No, it's because your brain has to program.
It's consistency. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Those synapses, those mental pathways, your brain is programming itself to do this. So the next day it's like, okay, well, let's play it. It might not be perfect, but it's going to be leaps and bounds. You're going to surprise yourself. And I learned the importance of a metronome. But more importantly, I use a drum beat instead. These metronomes, I've got one of these Sabine Zip Beat metronomes. I've had it for 21 years. I threw it across the room and smashed it. I couldn't stand the sound of it. I went on to put a drum beat on. I was on cloud nine. Everything was fine because it's all about tonality for me, right? I hate metronomes. Oh, yeah. But a drum beat, go use a drum beat. They've got apps on your phone. You can find them for free on the internet. Go on YouTube. They got drum beats. So yeah. Anyway, So there you go. And that's what we've got today, folks. And it's been we've covered the gamut as far as we went from Dio to practicing to, you know, the realities of life, I guess.
We which we tend to do. We cover a lot of different things. I just want to say, if, you know, anybody has questions, comments, they want to, you know, tell us what they think, they got questions that they want to ask us, please just hit us up, let us know. Justin and I are definitely, you know, very open to communicating with people. We'd love to hear feedback either way. If you hate us, you don't, you know, it's all right, because it's all music, right? Want to give a shout out to the fellas, and we hope this finds you well. I enjoyed their last podcast. They actually talk about music, which is pretty cool that they have a little snippet in there about it. So worth listening to. They're fun group of guys. Mixsauce and Fireside Chat. Just anybody else that we're missing?
That's about it.
Slew of people that I would say thank you for. You know, and go and check them out. There's lots of good stuff. Lots of good music. Gotta go and look for it. Use that button. Use that mouse. Go find
Oh,
it.
Tony McAlpine's got a new album coming out soon.
Tony.
It's called Equilibrium, so I'm putting a plug in for that. He's a great guy, awesome teacher, and just a phenomenal musician. Phenomenal, if I can talk today.
Phenomenal.
Go check out that guy's music. It's incredible. His catalog is immense, and it's
speaking of people that have worked with a bunch of amazing people, the gentleman I was mentioning that Mark Tremonti kind of learned some stuff from was him. In an interview, he had mentioned him and a technique that he'd picked up. So definitely a cool guy. Definitely something worth listening to. Justin, I know that you work with him too, which it's awesome. It's great. Tony, we appreciate what you do musically. Justin obviously gets the privilege of appreciating you more, in other ways that other people can't. So, thank you for listening. We hope to see you again on episode 10.
Have a good weekend, folks.